Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Osiris.
Okay, hey everybody. Welcome back to the latest installment of 36 from the Vault's mini season. I'm Rob.
And I'm Steve.
Yeah, and we're back for another installment of our mini tour presented by Smart Wool. Smart Wool's rolling out a new series of Grateful Dead apparel. You should check that out. And they were so kind as to get Steve and I back together because we're men in our 40s and we wouldn't talk to each other unless somebody came along and sponsored our podcast. So, anyway, we're catching up on all the exciting things that happened in the jam band world since we ended the original run of 36 from the Vault. And Steve, your next pick was a momentous occasion in the jam band world. Set shockwaves throughout the jam scene.
Well, this is my first pick. You had the pick last week. You did the Philco show, and that was a big event in the jam world of the last several months. Another big moment, I guess this occurred during our season. We talked about it a little, but we didn't really go in depth. It is the Goose concert from Radio City Music Hall on June 25th, 2022, featuring the one and only Trey Anastasio. Now, I'm excited to talk about this because the most controversial episode of 36 from the Vault, I would say hands down, was our curveball on Fish. Some of you love Fish. Some of you hate Fish. And it was fun to talk about Fish and have people argue, have people curse us for talking about them, have other people be happy that we're talking about them. And it was like, for this mini season, how can we return to this polarization? How can we irritate the people out there who were mad about the Fish show? Well, why don't we talk about Fish and Goose? Because not only will this irritate some Grateful Dead people out there, it may irritate a lot of Fish people who also like the Grateful Dead. Very polarizing band, Goose, because they're the rising jam band on the scene right now. I wrote an article this year calling them the next great American jam band, which everyone agreed with me, by the way. I was shocked. No disagreement on that at all. 100% unanimous. I'm joking, of course. There were people who were like, what about Billy Strings? And I was like, Billy Strings is cool. Yeah. He's technically a solo artist. I know he has a band, but just from a pure sort of pedantic nomenclature. Yeah.
Can you be a jam solo artist?
Yeah, exactly. he's obviously a big star. Yeah. No slight to Billy Strings. He's a phenomenon. I have to say that for me personally, Jamgrass, not a huge fan. And Billy Strings in general hasn't connected with me yet. No disrespect. I'm sure it's on me. I hope to get on board eventually, but you know, just the Jamgrass thing, I'm not a huge fan of. Do you get into Jamgrass?
No. Not that interested. Yeah. No. I've given Billy Strings a try. We're going to talk about me giving Goose a try. I don't know. It's fine. I got no beef with it. Not in a rush to go see it. Sorry, Billy.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope I get on board because it seems like a great show. Seems like a lot of fun. I always like enjoying things. But anyway, let's put that aside. We're not talking about Billy Strings. Yeah. We're talking about Goose and Trey Anastasio. And this was a big moment of the Jam World of 2022. Maybe even a big moment historically. We'll see how things unfold. It seems right now that Goose is on their way to being the next arena level band. They're not there yet. They're playing multiple nights at Radio City Music Hall. They've played sold out shows at Red Rocks. They're on that level at the moment. It seems like playing MSG would be the next step in New York from Radio City. Is there a step in between Radio City and MSG?
I wouldn't think so. No, I think you're pretty much maybe the Barclays Center. Is the Barclays smaller than MSG?
Not, I don't think by any like substantial like way. I mean, it would be just instead of playing two nights at Radio City, maybe next time you play three or four. Right. And then at that point, it's like, okay, now we go to MSG. They're on that path. So, you know, barring, I don't know what would happen. Maybe they're going to plateau at some point, or there's a drug overdose, or someone pulls a hamstring.
There's another pandemic.
You know, you're going to, there's another pandemic, or someone in the band pulls a Kyrie Irving and starts tweeting out anti-Semitic documentaries.
Then they can play at the Barclays Center. It'd be perfect.
Yeah. Suspended by the Jam Band Federation.
The Jam Band Commissioner. Are we the Jam Band Commissioners? We might be.
I wouldn't want that job. That's an impossible job. That's Steve Silberman. Well, let's nominate him. He's a respected elder of the scene. Maybe David Lemieux. Those two can fight it out. But yeah, this was a big moment. Trey shows up at this show. This is a big show. They played three sets.
Yeah.
One acoustic, one sort of semi-normal. Father John Misty shows up during the second set.
That's a big deal. Lots of questions, but keep going.
Okay, but just let me. And then Trey shows up for the third set, and then that's like the Trey set. So, and you got people online talking about passing the torch. That's a big meme.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's people out there who are muting
pass the word torch.
Torch or passing the torch. They're muting that because they can't stand this conversation. Other people are excited.
Now Trey is touring with Goose. Tab Goose Tour is about to happen as we're recording. Yeah.
Yeah. This month, November, Trey and Goose touring together. Trey's solo band, Tab, is touring with Goose. Big deal. They're playing arenas basically on the East Coast. And I don't think either one of those acts could play arenas on their own. Not even, I don't think Trey on his own could play an
small
arena.
Small arenas maybe, but yeah.
But those two together, it elevates, certainly elevates Goose. But I mean, because Goose is playing smaller arenas now because they're from Connecticut. The Jam Band stronghold there on the East Coast. So Goose can do that over there and Tab together. We're going to focus specifically on the song Hunger Sight here because that is the most dramatic moment of the show. But I'm just curious, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I would describe you as a Goose agnostic at the moment. You're not a hater. You're not a fan. You're sort of like, okay, where is this going? Am I going to like this eventually?
I think
where are you
Goose
at?
Curious is probably the term, right? I'm dabbling.
Goose curious, Goose agnostic. Yeah. You're Goose Switzerland.
Exactly. Yeah. I've been trying because like part of me is like, I can see how much fun people are having getting into Goose. And I want in on that party. It's the kind of thing where like, you know, it's a distant memory now, but you know, the first year of learning about Phish and getting into Phish and getting the tapes and just absorbing that band was so exciting in the mid 90s. And it's really fun to see, you know, a younger generation have that happen with Goose. And able to see them as they're growing, like seeing them move up the venue chain, like you're talking about, must just be so much fun. And so I really want to get into it and participate in that fun. But I just haven't really like found my way in. But since we stopped recording, the interesting thing I found, and this is going to shock you, Steve, my in to Goose, and it's still kind of in progress. I wouldn't say it's happened yet, but I think it is going to be through their studio album, the new one.
Oh,
which I have listened to more than I would have expected. I gave it a listen because I think you and I read the Pitchfork review, which was relatively positive. I saw some chatter that the album was actually good. Some people talking online about Dripfield, it's called, right? Being yes. a good listen, and that they did a really nice job with this album. So I put it on just out of curiosity, and I've actually spun it, you know, a fair number of times, certainly more than I've listened to like a single Goose show, because I kept listening to Goose shows and not really kind of bouncing off of it, not really finding anything to latch onto. But I think I really like the album, which is like, as you know, totally opposite to my perspective on Phish and to some extent the Grateful Dead, which is like the studio albums, you don't need them. Like, you can totally engage with the band through their live shows, and the studio albums are like, you know, artifacts that aren't that important or that relevant. But I don't know if you have insight on this, but Goose seems to be a pretty good studio band, and it has helped me start enjoying their material more, their songs more. Like the song we're talking about today, Hunger Sight, I think sounds great on that record.
Yeah, I mean, I know when I interviewed Goose for my feature that ran earlier this year, I asked them about studio albums versus live, and what are their expectations that fans are even going to care about their studio records? And Rick, who's the lead singer and guitar player and main songwriter, he was very upfront about how he takes the studio very seriously, and that he likes recording at least as much as he likes playing live. So it does seem like something that, you know, they're not just going in the studio and replicating their live show, that there is something about recreating, you know, doing something separate on record from what they do live. And I'm going to get this wrong. I should have had this ready to go. Like, the guy who produced their record has done indie rock stuff. Like, he's done like the last bunch of like Craig Finn records. I think that like Joe Russo is involved in that. It's like this upstate New York dude who like does a lot of kind of like folksy, rootsy type records. Okay. And you can, I think, hear that on Dripfield. I also think Rick and Peter, who's the mustachioed sidekick in the band, the other guitar player and keyboardist, he's like the George Harrison of the band. He writes some songs, but not as much as Rick. I think they're both good songwriters, like good pop rock tunesmiths, where the songs do work if they're just 4 minutes long. They don't need to be 20
minutes.
That's
the thing I think I was missing by listening to the shows first, is that, you know, like any jam band, that gets lost a little bit. Like a song like Hunger Sight is going to go, you know, 15 to 20 minutes, it seems like, most versions I saw. By the end of the jam, I've already forgotten what the actual song sounds like. So being totally unfamiliar with the band. So in a weird way, just having the songs is now helping me appreciate, you know, what they bring to the table. And the thing is, like, they actually do have, in their songwriting at least, I think maybe less so in their jamming, but definitely in their songwriting, like, a unique approach to being a jam band. Like, they're pulling from influences that, you know, Phish is not, or the Grateful Dead is not. They're bringing some new elements in, which is always what you need to be, I think, to be the next big jam band. You have to have your, you know, you need to be familiar and inspired, I guess, by the jam band ancestors and giants, but you also need to introduce something new. Otherwise, it's just, you know, another band doing, you know, carbon copies of Shakedown Street every night.
Yeah, I mean, I think their strength is that they're not pretending like they live in the 60s, which is what is always a pitfall for a lot of bands like this in the jam and in the indie jam world, you know, like where I feel like, oh, you're trying to recreate the 60s and 70s type scene, and you're drawing on the same influences that the Grateful Dead had or that Phish had. And with Goose, it's pretty obvious that they're products of like the aughts and 2010s, right. Like indie music of that era, which makes sense because they're guys in their like late 20s and early 30s. So yeah, Bon Iver is going to be an influence. Like Vampire right. Weekend is going to be
they
an
cover,
influence.
They cover Arcade Fire in this show.
Pre-cancellation Arcade right, Fire, just, by the way. I don't
just
know if they're still doing Arcade Fire songs. and, you know, Father John Misty is right. an influence. And Father John Misty actually shows up and does I'm Writing a Novel from the first Father John Misty record, which Goose had already been covering.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they had been covering that. I was really baffled by this appearance by Father John Misty, which is also a really funny thing, and we'll get into Hungersight next and Trey. But I was trying to think this through. Is Father John Misty actually more famous than Trey to non-jam band people? Like, I feel like he's a pretty well-known guy. And yet, in this show, they have this long explanation of like, hey, that guy's named Father John Misty. You should go check out his records. Where, right. in the meantime, right. they, you know, when Trey comes out, everybody just, you know, flips their shit. So it's just such right. a weird, yeah. you know, backwards version of like the fame of these two guest stars would be anywhere else.
It's definitely a testament to how sheltered, in a way, maybe the jam band community can be, or at least segments of it, that, you know, Trey's obviously very famous. I understand why people would be excited in this audience to see him. But yeah, I thought that too. It was funny that people, that I think it's Peter says, yeah, this Father John Misty guy, you should listen yeah. to him. And it was clear from the audience reaction that a lot of people had no clue who he was, or maybe they just didn't care. But, you know, the thing with him is that it's clear that he's into mm-hmm. it. Talking about Father John Misty, and he actually comes back for the encore when they do Tomorrow Never Knows. He plays
yeah,
drums.
Like he did in the old Fleet Foxes days. Yeah, that's cool.
So very cool. But obviously the Trey coming out and playing a bunch of songs with them, that's the historic part of this show. And I wanted to focus on Hungersight because this is when Trey first comes yeah. out. And which is, I think, a pretty electric moment as someone who likes Goose, just to see the crowd reaction. And then when Trey goes into his first solo, which is at about the 5 minute mark, I think it's 5:09. And you don't get this totally on the soundboard, but if you listen to an odd, the crowd just erupts mm-hmm. as soon as he starts playing it. And it is a really nice moment. Like, even if you don't like Goose or you're skeptical of Trey, it's pretty heartwarming to see. I think it's cool to see these two different generations interacting. And I want to get your take on this. I put this in the outline and you said you had an opinion on it. To me, there's something very mutually beneficial about mm-hmm. this, because obviously on one hand it elevates Goose. You know, you have one of the most famous jam band musicians ever, arguably like the greatest living one. Oh, I guess just not counting like the guys in the Grateful Dead, like Weir and Lesh. But outside of that, you have Trey acknowledging these guys. But then there is also something about Trey associating himself with the hot young thing that has a lot of energy to it and being accepted by mm-hmm. that. It did remind me a little of like, and I just wrote a book about Pearl Jam, but it reminded me of like Neil Young and Pearl Jam. I think there was a similar thing there, like where Neil Young gave Pearl Jam gravitas and Pearl Jam kicked Neil in the ass a little bit, or at least exposed him to an audience that might not have cared about him otherwise.
Yeah.
Is that an insane comparison
to make? Well, I think
that
last part is the difference, and maybe this is just, so we've talked about that appearance before, also very pivotal in my music development, Neil Young and Pearl Jam playing together on the MTV Awards. But my
when also doing an album together
and
later,
then doing the album. Yeah. My reaction to that appearance was, why am I wasting my time with Pearl Jam? I should be listening to this guy. Cause I was like, right. I hadn't heard of Neil Young. Like I was, what, that was 94, right? 93, 94,
93.
So I was 14 years old and I was like, holy crap, this old guy is doing like what Pearl Jam does, but man, it sounds even better. I'm going to listen to this guy instead. I don't think there was a single person in Radio City Music Hall who was like, this Trey Anastasio is pretty good. I'm going to check out this Phish band. Like, I think everybody there is, it's already baked in that they're Phish fans too, I would say. Because the Goose Phish fan wars or whatever seem pretty one-sided. It's pretty much just Phish fans looking down on Goose fans, not, you know, the other way around.
Yeah, I will say though, and I'm going to choose my words carefully here because I don't want to say something that I regret, but like, we saw Phish this summer. Yeah. At Alpine Valley, saw three shows, and I was like pretty disappointed by those shows. And I have to say that just new Phish in general to me has felt like a little boring, and that's partly due to the playing. It's partly due to like the songs that Trey has been writing lately, which are not my bag at all. Okay, again, I'm choosing my words carefully here because I do feel like I'm enjoying Goose right now more than I enjoy Phish right now. And with Phish, I've become the like a 1.0 or bust person. Basically, the type of fan that annoys me with the Grateful Dead who only will listen to the 70s. That's what I am with Phish right now. And I'm like Johnny Cash in the Hurt music video, knocking over the wine glass, like, what have I become? Because I don't like this, but that's how I feel. Like, after we saw those Phish shows, I was like, I'm kind of down on this. And I had to listen to some 90s Phish to get me back excited about the band again. And I'm like, so that's why, going back to my analogy, I feel like Trey playing with this younger, hungrier band is a good thing for him. I think he can benefit from
that. I wish, so this appearance came between like the little spring tour Phish did and the summer tour. And I wish there was more like something you could point to from the summer tour then and be like, wow, Trey is playing totally different, in the same way that like the Fare Thee Well shows totally changed Trey's, you know, trajectory as a guitarist.
The shows that we saw came after.
Exactly. So maybe they just needed more prolonged exposure, and that'll happen this fall. But
I don't know.
Before we move on to the Hunger Site, though, just real quick, I'm going to steal this from Osiris media mogul RJB, who on, I believe, an episode of the Helping Friendly Pod compared it to another famous sit-in, which was Neil Young again sitting in with Phish at Farm Aid in 1998, which I think in that case, it's one where it benefited Phish more than it benefited Neil Young for him to appear. He gave him, that was definitely like a torch passing, like stamp of approval. Like, you should check out these guys. Cause he came out at sort of spontaneously, the story goes, and played, you know, a 20 minute long Down by the River with Phish, in front of a group, a fan base at Tinley Park, that was not there to see Phish. They were there to see Neil and John Mellencamp and Willie Nelson, right? So when RJ made that comparison, I was immediately angry on both sides of that equation, like comparing Neil to Trey and comparing Phish to Goose. The more I thought about it, the more it seems like the more apt comparison as far as sort of elder statesmen, you know, blessing the younger band and sort of saying, hey, these are guys you should pay attention to.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
So what did you think about this live version? You were saying before that you've been digging the studio Goose more than the live Goose. Did adding Trey to the equation make you feel differently?
Yeah, I mean, I like this jam a lot. The first time I heard it was before I had spent a lot of time with the album. and it just sounded like jammy noise to me. Like it kind of went in one ear and went out the other. The more I listened to it, though, the more I liked it. And I mean, I know maybe this is nothing to say nothing bad about Goose. But Trey, I think, is a great guy to have come and sit in with your band. Because I think a lot of guest star sit-ins, especially if you're a famous guitarist, is just you show up, you rip a solo over the chord progression of the song that you learned 5 minutes ago, and then you leave, right? Trey sticks around. He sings with the band. That's something I'm really impressed with, is that he sings on Hunger Sight. He actually takes a verse of the song after that, right? I forget the name of that song. What is that song? Arcadia?
Arcadia. Yeah.
He's clearly reading off a teleprompter, but that's okay. That's just modern concerts. And then Trey,
I think him singing is like the big thing.
And the crowd freaks out over that too, which I love. I love that crowd cheering.
And he doesn't
too.
Need to like, to expect him to like memorize the lyrics and then remember them in front of the
audience.
He
can't even remember his lyrics.
He totally can use a teleprompter. He shouldn't take any guff for that at all.
But the thing that I love about Trey as a guitarist and why he is one of my favorite guitarists of all time is that he is as good of a rhythm guitar player as he is a lead guitar player. And him interacting with Rick through that whole jam, I think just sounds great because Trey is a very gracious guitar player. So it's not just Trey came out and played a solo with Goose. Trey came out and like also lifted up the members of Goose and like had a musical conversation with Rick, especially on this song. I think a sit-in goes a little bit too long. Like it does, like it's like a whole hour and I'm losing interest by the end, maybe just because I haven't listened to it as much. But I think for this like 20-minute jam, like the interplay between the two of them works really well and sounds great.
Yeah, it's hard for me to analyze this purely in musical terms just because I think the gesture that Trey makes is so heartwarming that it makes it hard for me to be objective. I just think there's so much generosity of spirit in this performance for the reasons that you were saying as well, that Trey has his moment having a solo, but it seems like he's working with the band as well. And if you watch the video too, it's obvious how joyous of an occasion this is for Goose. Although I think at the same time, they rise to the occasion as well. You can tell that, they're not just fanboys up there. You know, they are a consummate band themselves, and they can bring this guy in who's great, who's a hero. But it all makes sense, and it sounds really cool. So I don't know. I love the moment. Just beyond the music, I think it's such a heartwarming performance to me. That's the thing that I really love about it. And, I would love to bring you into the Goose fold because I think this would help with the healing in the jam band community. I think this can show that Goose is not here to replace Fish, just as Fish was not here to replace the Dead, although in a sense they did, but that was a different circumstance in the moment because Jerry died. Trey is alive and well, and he's going to be alive and well for a long time. I think these bands can coexist, and it shows how they can complement each other and work together, and it's a beautiful thing.
Well, that brings up a question that I have for you, which is, in a world where Jerry lived, and the only way he would have lived is if he had cleaned up somewhat as well, do you think Jerry would have passed the torch to Fish and sat in with Fish eventually? Because Bob and Phil did in 99 and 2000. And, you know, they've crossed over a million times since then. But could you ever have seen Jerry, if he had lived, playing this sort of like, you know, big brother to the scene role that Trey is currently playing by sitting in with younger bands?
I think so. There's nothing to suggest that he wouldn't have done
that. Well, I mean, I think
it would have been clear that he'd be the man.
Was not that into sitting in with people, though, is the thing. I mean, he played with Dylan, that one famous show he played with Dylan. Are there other examples after, the 70s of Jerry just showing up and playing with somebody?
It might have been an instance, like, where members of Fish would show up in the Dead set, you know, like, where, you know, in the sort of like Bruce Hornsby, Branford Marsalis, you know, whoever, I'm trying to think of other guest stars, like people that just kind of showed up with the Dead and played with them for a while. I could see maybe something like that. Maybe you bring Trey in, or maybe you're bringing in Paige, you know, because you're sick of, because Vince is still in the band in this scenario. So maybe you're like, well, let's have a ripping piano player to compliment Vince on a show. You know, something like that, I feel like probably would have happened. I don't know. I mean, it seems like it would have been too much of, like, you know, two big elephants together to, like, not have that mm-hmm. happen. Mm-hmm. But who knows? We'll never know.
It's a thought experiment that many jam band fans have probably gone through at some point or another. I'm just waiting personally for Trey to sit in with King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, because clearly they are the next hot jam band as of this fall. I think Goose has been elbowed out of the side by King Gizzard.
I hear Trey was at the Red Rock show, or one of the Red Rock shows.
Really?
So he's definitely a fan. He's talked about loving King Gizzard. He was hanging out backstage. So, I mean, he just needs the invite. I'm sure he would do
Trey,
it.
Man, Trey, once his kids went to college, he's back to going to shows, playing with anybody who will ask. It's a beautiful thing. I love it.
Love it. Love it, man. Well, that does it for this episode of 36 from the Vault, our Comfort Listens edition. We'll be back with another Comfort Listen next
week. Brought
to
you by SmartWall. Thank you very much, SmartWall.
Osiris. One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget, and we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.